This is the Tan Report. I'm your host, Han Trung. And this week's episode of the podcast is pretty sweet. It's about Easter candy. And because of that, I recently found myself touring a chocolate factory. If there was ever a time that I could say I felt like a kid in a candy store, that was it.
Is that chocolate or caramel down there?
This is chocolate.
Ooh, look at that. It's like a chocolate river.
I was gazing at a stream of chocolate flowing into a pool of chocolate. And what kept that stream going was simple vibration.
Chocolate has got a lot of the same viscosity characteristics of like ketchup. So if you're trying to get ketchup out of a bottle, you know, and you're trying to put it on your fries, the best way to get the ketchup out of the bottle is to vibrate it, and it'll just pour out of the bottle. So you just shake it very fast, like a vibration, ketchup will pour out. Chocolate's the same way. So
okay, instead of an up and down motion, you're saying shake it side to side.
We're shaking it. So this is a very fine screen. To get the chocolate to go through it, we're vibrating it.
By the way, it smells great in here.
Yeah. This is the best room here. The whole place used to smell like that, you know, the way we used to do it the old way. Now it's so very much enclosed.
We'll get to this company's old way of making chocolate versus its current way in a little bit. But first, let me introduce you to my tour guide.
Rob Nelson, third generation of Nelson family here at Elmer Chocolate. I'm currently CEO.
Easter, of course, is a religious holiday for Christians, and I guess you could say certain Easter candy have a religious following of their own. For some, Easter and Easter baskets would not be the same without the marshmallows from Peeps, or a milk chocolate bunny. And what about the Cadbury cream eggs and those commercials going back to the 80s?
You're looking at a very unusual kind of egg from Cadbury that's only around till Easter. Its shell is pure, rich Cadbury milk chocolate. But look, inside sits a sweet, creamy yellow yolk surrounded by delicious white filling. Cream eggs from Cadbury. Why, they're the best thing to come along since the Easter Bunny. And when he's gone, they're gone.
The Cadbury cream egg is under the larger chocolate umbrella of the Hershey Company, based in Hershey, Pennsylvania. I grew up in the Northeast, so practically all the Easter chocolate I ever ate was a Hershey product. But down here in Louisiana and along the Gulf South, you'll find more people talking about the Elmer Gold Brick Egg instead of the Cadbury Cream Egg.
Heavenly Hash and Gold Brick are usually neck and neck in this market. Pecan eggs are right behind it. Those are the top three items in this market. You know, the national leader. There are other items that are very, you know, people would know about that are the national leaders, but in this market, they're not. In this market, it's all about Gold Bricks, Heavenly Hash, and pecan eggs.
The maker of those Easter chocolates is the Elmer Candy Corporation, but a lot of folks down here just call it Elmer's. Its origin goes back almost 170 years.
The company was founded in 1855 by Christopher Henry Miller, who was a German immigrant that came to New Orleans in the 1840s. He started the company in 1855, and he had, I can't remember the number, maybe nine daughters. And one of his daughters married a gentleman by the name of Augustus Elmer. He ended up going into the business with his father-in-law. At that time, it was the Miller-Elmer Candy Company. And then after Mr. Miller's passing, it just became the Elmer Candy Company. That was around the turn of the centuries, I believe. Great family, and it was a very large family involved in the business. But in 1962, 63, and thereabouts, my grandfather bought the company, Elmer Candy. And at that time, my father was a physicist. He was designing, I think, missiles for McDonnell Douglas out in California.
And whoa.
When I was growing up, he built our TVs. He built the stereo. You know, and he wouldn't buy anything. He had to build everything. So that's the kind of mind he had. And I spent a lot of weekends with him as a kid growing up. You know, he'd be in there working on, you know, getting equipment to work and everything like that.
Rob may be the head of a company that makes hundreds of millions of dollars from candy every year. But that wasn't quite his plan back in the day.
I mean, I'm a licensed attorney. My plan was to go a whole different direction. And in the early 90s, that's when we started having a lot of growth, especially in Valentine. I remember the first year I was here, it was just like new customer after new customer after new customer. And we're like, how are we ever going to make all of this? It was going to be a temporary move for me. I was helping out. But then I figured out it's a fantastic industry. Some of my best friends are competitors in my industry. So the industry is like a big family. I just found a love for the industry, a love for confectionery and the products and what we're doing here. And Not only that, the platform, what we have to do good in our parish here in Tangipahoa Parish and in Ponchatoula.
Ponchatoula is a small city of about 8,000 people. It's in Tangipahoa Parish here in Louisiana, about 50 miles northwest of New Orleans. It's home to the Ponchatoula Strawberry Festival, so you'll find a lot of strawberry-themed things around here, from businesses to the clothes folks wear. In 1970, the Elmer Candy Corporation moved its headquarters from New Orleans to Ponchatoula. And you're now the largest employer in Ponchatoula.
We are. I think we've been the largest employer for some time, and Ponchatoula is a great place to be. You know, I think a lot of the success from our company is the fact that we, you know, did choose to locate here in 1970. And working with Tangipahoa Parish and the city of Ponchatoula, it's been a great relationship.
I'm curious, why the move? Because I think, you know, if you're a New Orleans-based company, as Elmer Chocolate was, why the move to Ponchatoula? Because, you know, I don't think of Ponchatoula as a city of chocolate. I think of a city of strawberries.
Strawberries, absolutely. Prior to 1970, our company had multiple facilities. And which is referred, you know, the warehouse district, really, of New Orleans. So the main office was on Magazine Street, right off Poydras, so the Regions Bank building downtown is where the plant was. These were old plants. They, you know, we've been around since 1855. These weren't the most cutting-edge plants. And so, you can see how the land is, with the use of that land and the area downtown has been transformed into a lot of great things. So, it's just not a manufacturing area to be on Poydras, right, these days.
It's a little crowded.
No other manufacturers on Poydras. So at that time, I mean, I wasn't involved then. That's before my time. But I know that they looked at Mississippi. They looked at a lot of different places. But, you know, being here in Ponchatoula, we're at the intersection of I-55 and I-10. There's a lot of reasons that, you know, went into it. But, you know, people over here are just fantastic to work with.
Louisiana certainly has its challenges regarding economic development, but when your business physically runs on sugar, it doesn't hurt to be based in this state.
There was a sugar shortage in the United States this past year.
How did I miss that?
Well, because you're in Louisiana, we didn't have a shortage here. Okay. I think that the drought has affected the crop a little bit, but all of our sugar comes from Louisiana, up in the north. You know, being in a hot, humid environment is not the best place to make candy and chocolate, right?
Not on
and
paper.
So people ask us why we're here, and I said, well, I mean, I could go into the whole long process of the regional candy companies that we've been here a long time in the following here, but when there was a sugar shortage, we're in the heart of all, you know, the best cane in the country. So all of our sugar is coming from Louisiana, and so we had no worries with supply.
You heard Rob mention being a regional candy company. Well, when it comes to Easter candy, the region a particular company is in and the region the consumer is in can dictate what kind of Easter candy is being sold and being bought. For Elmer's Easter chocolates, their region is the Gulf South, basically following the path of Interstate 10.
Elmer Chocolate, once upon a time, was a general line candy company. And you had around the country all these general line candy companies that made all different products, but only distributed to a certain area of the country. Elmer was that company for the Gulf South. So we made hard candy, chocolates, mints. The Elmer family actually invented what is known as its Chewies. They're still sold by Elmer Fine Foods in New Orleans. But, you know, Cheetos is copied and things like that. But the Elmer family actually invented that process. So there's a lot of history there. So the Easter candy, it's a completely different dynamic than the rest of our business, right? So if you go to a retailer here in New Orleans during Valentine's Day, what you see on the shelf, and you see a lot of our product on the shelf, you'll see that on every shelf throughout pretty much North America in every retailer. Easter, not the same. I mean, our Easter market goes from about Houston to about Pensacola, and about as far north as I-20.
Why is that? Because the rest of the country are heathens?
I think it's interesting because there are parts of the country that have traditions and have been handed down from generation to generation. And, you know, you go back to that general line candy company thing, you know, Gold Bricks and Heavenly Hash, just huge. And it's just so well known. And I mentioned Houston because after Katrina, we could actually see, you know, there were people that, you know, moved from the New Orleans area to Houston, and we were able to find out where in Houston they moved. So we actually make sure that we have product in the in those retailers around the in those areas of Houston, because I mean, in the beginning, people were calling like, "I can't find it," you know, and you know, we so, but we figured it out.
I need my Easter fix.
Yeah, one of the states that has a lot of manufacturers of chocolate and candies is Pennsylvania. So Pennsylvania is a very strong Easter market. Pennsylvania and Louisiana are the top two markets in the country.
Really?
Yeah.
Pennsylvania, I can understand, but I guess, you know, Louisiana wouldn't necessarily pop to mind.
It's because of Goldbrook's and Heavenly Hatch at Easter.
Yeah. So for people who aren't familiar with, like, what a gold brick would be, like, describe it for them.
Okay. So the Elmer family, they formulated the gold brick in 1936, so they introduced it in 1936. The center is a melt-away center, and it's formulated in a way so that when you eat it, it's hitting that 98.6 temperature in your mouth, that it just melts away. And it has pecans. That's how it was built from the beginning, and it is now a melt-away center, you know, covered in... We do milk chocolate version and a dark chocolate version. At that time, when it came out in 1936, it was a premium item. You know, when candy bars sold for 5 cents, it was always the most expensive thing out there. But and there was somebody that told me this, you know, decades ago, that was alive in 1936 and said, "Hey, you know, it was such a special thing to have that because it just made you feel rich." And you know, thinking about 1936, coming off the Depression and everything like that, that was something that was important to people and made people feel good. Heavenly Hash was actually invented by a confectionery shop. We know it was on Canal Street. It may have been in one of the old department stores, but I'm not sure. I'd love to find that out. I've been trying to figure that out. But the Elmer family purchased the recipe and the trademarks from that shop, and then started to mass produce it, and that started in 1923. So it's marshmallow, almonds. In the beginning, it was pecans. At some point in time, I think the pecan market went crazy, and they started using almonds or something like that. But and then everybody liked the almonds, so they stuck with the almonds. But we do a milk chocolate and a dark chocolate version. It's not your typical marshmallow. It's a very moist. It's not a tough marshmallow like a Jet Puff that you would find in the store. It's a whole different process, and it's more of what would be called a mallow, more of a creamy marshmallow. I think it's a fantastic piece to eat. I remember in my teens, I was in college at the time, but you know, I wasn't on spring break in Florida with my friends. I was driving a truck delivering Easter candy every year. And
you knew how to party.
Yeah. But I remember I was down in they called it down in the bayou, and I think it probably was Homer or Thibodeau where I was on that day, and this gentleman came up in his heavy Cajun accent, which I can't do, but he asked me if did Elmer ever think about buying Hershey. You know, the idea, you know, because the perception that Elmer was so big based on the amount of candy that was sold in this market that we must be bigger than Hershey. Well, the Hershey folks get a big laugh out of that one. But the perception of the company and those items is something that never ceases to amaze me. I mean, my expert sales team will hate it when I say that it sells itself, because they do work hard to make sure that product gets out there and it's the right amounts in the right stores and everything. But, you know, that demand's there every year. We never have to talk the customer into buying Goldbrick and Heavenly Hash pecan eggs, because they know they actually have to have it in there, or else the shopper's going to go to another store.
I understand Valentine's, but why do we have candy on Easter when all the other holidays we kind of don't? Like, we don't have candy for Thanksgiving. I don't think candy is really central to Christmas. Like, why do you think Easter came to this candy holiday?
Yeah, well, actually, the biggest holiday for candy is Halloween, so that's huge, of course. Christmas, you have box chocolate and gift box chocolate, and there are novelty items, and for us, that's our second biggest season to Valentine. But Easter, that's a good question. I don't know if I have a great answer. I could find a good answer for you.
I don't have an answer, too. I'm just kind of curious. It's like, you know, Easter is very, obviously, it's a very Christian holiday and a holy day, but...
somehow the Easter Bunny and these chocolates started seeping into it. I wonder.
Well, I will say this. I think that they're the reason why these items are popular today, and I've verified this. Louisiana has the highest percentage of people that live in the state that were born in the state. You would think that that's going to encourage or allow traditions to be passed on easier than, you know, maybe in states where you have a more transient population or whatnot. And Louisiana is very heavily Christian and Roman Catholic. And so I guess one thing about it is some people, I mean, I don't agree with it to give up chocolate for Lent, but, you know, whatever, you know, everybody feels they need it. But that's why we sell it, you know, before Lent starts too. But I think you give something up, and then I've heard tons of stories about people giving up chocolate for Lent. But, you know, when it comes to Easter, hey, that's why it's so big, is because you gave it up and everybody wants it. So I think that may be part of it.
To make sure it has the supply of Gold Brick eggs, Heavenly Hash, and Pecan eggs to meet that seasonal demand, Elmer has to work in advance. Rob was gracious enough to show me where that Easter magic is made, but before I could enter that place, or even the factory floor, I had to put on a hairnet, smock, run my shoes across a machine that pulled off dirt, and then I had to dip my hands into this panel with ports, which is just my fancy way of saying there were holes in it. It was automated hand washing.
Ooh. All right, well, I'm gonna get one of these at home.
When you're selling something that millions of people will eat, you got to be careful and clean.
What's remarkable to me, because when I think of a candy factory or a place that would make candy or chocolate, I thought it'd be like messy, just with stuff. Because I used to work in the kitchen, and you know, when you make stuff, it's going to be messy. But this place is spotless.
And this is actually making my hair curl a little bit because we're in a changeover. So this is the messiest it gets. You know, we're changing over and they're having to clean out lines and things like that. Today, it's all about food safety. Being a food manufacturer, you have a huge responsibility. People have trust in your product. When they buy your product, it's, you know, not going to hurt them. I mean, they're going to enjoy it.
Yeah, there's a huge liability.
And we do things like we environmentally test our facility so we could catch something on the front end before it even would get to our product. So we know environmentally we're in a good place.
Elmer's history in its candy making goes back to the 1800s, but it's now using cutting-edge technology and robots to produce most of its mainline chocolates.
We did an expansion back in 2015 and 16. It was a $45 million expansion we did here in Ponchatoula at our facility here, adjacent to the one that we opened up in 1970. It really took us to the full automation of the whole process, and there's no other operation like it in the world.
Rob walked me through their facility, which is massive. It's this network of robotic arms, computers, and conveyor lines.
This piece of equipment that we're looking at is cutting-edge technology to make molded candies. We're making box chocolate candies here. So what we see here, we're in the middle of a changeover right now, but they're taking out a mold that was making a truffle, and they're putting another piece. It's a different shape piece. Same line does everything. So the distance all the way around is 130 yards. It's a massive line.
What's in here?
This room we can make three different centers. The first line is a fondant line. We make like a white cream center here, and we can flavor or color it any which way we want to do it. We can also make more of a nougat or a marshmallow here. We can aerate it if we want to. The middle line here is a caramel line, continuous caramel line.
The automation allows for precision.
We can vary the level of how premium it is. You know, so we have some pieces at certain price points that we're trying to keep, you know, make it affordable. It's a great piece. But if you want to bump it up, you add butter, you add different types of milk, put you in a whole different, but we can do it all on this line. This is called an intense cooler. So if you can picture this, you know, we try to make a caramel that is not too runny and not too chewy. We want to be a healthy medium. We found in our research that if it's too chewy, people don't like, you know, messes up their dental work, or maybe they look funny having to chew it. If it's too runny, people that wear makeup would say it affects their, you know, it messes up their makeup. So we want to be right in between. And to get a little chewier caramel than a runny one, you got to heat it up, and then you got to pump it. But we are depositing a caramel at 120 degrees into a chocolate shell that is only 1.2 millimeters. So, and we've got to be able to freeze that before it melts the chocolate. And that's what this does, this intense cooler. There are not too many of these.
Rob told me the robotic system Elmer runs allows the company to be very good in specific areas of production.
So one is the packaging. I mean, we're packing 4,000 pieces a minute by robot, or maybe a little bit more than that. Part of the expansion back in 2015 and 16 was going to the cutting edge technology of making chocolates. There aren't many lines like you'll see here.
When you hear about automation and robots, it's often followed up with the downsizing of the human sector of the workforce. But that's not the case at the Elmer Candy Corporation.
You're actually using more humans and employing more humans since you've automated. How does that work?
Because you automate and you're able to increase your volume, your output of your facility. We have grown as a company significantly since we did this. The new capabilities really put us into a position to take more of the market, and we've grown as a company. And, you know, we run more days, we run more shifts, we need more people. I've got numbers in my head of where our payroll is, but I know that it's probably 3 times what it was a decade ago, and we have more people here. And overall, the jobs are different, right? So when you're packing chocolates by hand, I'm probably dating myself, referring to the I Love Lucy episode where Lucy's trying to pack the chocolates by hand.
All right, girls, now this is your last chance. If one piece of candy gets past you and into the packing room unwrapped, you're fired.
Yes, ma'am.
Let her roll!
That's really kind of how it was. I mean, we had hundreds of people on these belts that the tray would go by and everybody's putting a certain piece of candy into the tray.
Rob says the people jobs at the Elmer factory are now more quality related because the machines are handling most of the quantity portion of the equation.
Instead of having that, you know, some of the same people that maybe were hand packing back then are in much higher positions here. Earning a lot more, you know, more than they did back then. So the average wage has gone up significantly.
As much as automation is helping the company increase its output, the robotic arms that were snatching up chocolates along the conveyor lines don't have anything to do with Elmer's Easter chocolates.
Everything's very highly automated, and it's people operating equipment from computer screens and things like that. It's very technical. When it becomes Easter, it's completely different. We go back to how it was always made. It goes from, you know, very much of a science to back to being an art, right? You know that we're making Easter candy when people come out and they've got cornstarch on their shirt or something like that. And, you know, it's not like punching keys on a computer. It's you know.
Very hands-on.
Very hands-on. It's special. And people enjoy it. We make it. It's kind of a celebration around here. I mean, I think this year everybody got a T-shirt. You know, I know the Easter Bunny, and I see people walking around town wearing their shirts. I mean, it's a symbol of pride that we make these products and people enjoy them, and so it is special. And my favorite is the dark chocolate heavenly hash. We only make it about 6 to 8 weeks out of the year, so it is special when we're making it.
Their Easter production window is now closed. So when we reached the room where the heavenly hash, gold brick, and pecan eggs are made, it was pretty quiet.
So we're in the starch molding room. And so that's how we make the famous heavenly hash center. We upstairs are mixing it in kettles, and then it drops through the ceiling into a starch mold. So we start out with a tray, fill it up with corn starch, and then a die comes down and makes the imprint. In this case, it'd be the heavenly hash egg imprint. And we deposit that marshmallow into it. Then it has to set up overnight. What the cornstarch does is it draws the moisture out of that marshmallow. So by the next morning, we're able to dump that tray, and the cornstarch goes back through the system. But the marshmallow in the center of the heavenly hash comes out and is able to be transported, still soft and tender. But it has enough of a skin to it that we can convey it to Enroberland to cover it with chocolate.
So these, all these lines used to make what that one line does, and more, actually does double about what these lines are doing.
So why do you keep these around if you still, if you have that state-of-the-art
Well, stuff? We need it for Easter, because this is where we do our Easter.
So you got to go old school for Easter,
going
huh?
Old school. So the first line is where we make our heavenly hash. The heavenly hash marshmallow comes out. There's another area where, and a piece of equipment that takes the excess cornstarch off the marshmallow, because if there's cornstarch on the marshmallow, chocolate won't stick to it. So we have to do that. And then it goes through this, you know, 40 feet of belt where we're actually putting those, each two almonds per egg, all by hand. So that's old school. At the center line here is where we make the pecan eggs. And then over here is where the gold brick centers are molded. And then they go back through for that enrobing for that, this is the melt-away center, and then it goes through to be covered with chocolate, either dark or milk chocolate.
Because of allergies, Elmer's has to be selective in putting nuts inside certain candies. But when it comes to the Easter chocolates, nuts are expected.
We've kind of kept it simple when it comes to the box chocolates. Now, knowing that, and since Gold Bricks and Heavenly Hash date back to 1936 and 1923, respectively, they have nuts. And they're made in a whole different area. And we don't change it. Because if you change that formula, we'd have people at the front door with torches and pitchforks upset with us. So some areas have had to change with the times, and other areas stay the way they it's always been.
Easter is a season, and so is the candy surrounding the holiday. But there are ways to enjoy it year-round. And that goes back to those regional Easter traditions Rob was talking about earlier. With Elmer's Gold Brick eggs, that's led to those eggs showing up in some unexpected ways.
I think the tradition is people, they buy it, they put it in the freezer, they save it so they have a year supply. Two interesting stories. One, there was, a New York Times article, and I haven't been able to find it. I just remember reading it at the time. But they had a picture of people's refrigerators out in front of their houses, and they had a story about the aftermath of Katrina. Well, one of the freezers that was right there on the front, you know, front page was in the freezer, and it didn't look nice because, you know, things had
no, nothing looked nice in those refrigerators.
But it had a heavenly hash right there in the freezer. And then the other is after the Saints won the Super Bowl, we did we called it Halftime Hash and Black and Gold Brick that we introduced, and it was beginning of the 2010 season. And so people went out and bought that, but it affected our Easter sales. Because people stored up their I guess they loaded up their freezers with the, you know, with the Saints version, and then they didn't have to buy as much the next year.
As far as work-related challenges go, that seems like a pretty good problem to have. Not bad for someone who was planning to be an attorney.
You could have gotten into a business where maybe you caught some flack, but I think in this business, nobody's going to argue against you making candy and making people happy. I just don't see a downside to it. Like, nobody's going to sit there and say, like, man, that guy was a jerk because he gave me candy or provided candy.
Candy makes people happy.
Yeah.
I mean, it definitely does. Being in a chocolate business, it's hard to always have it with you because certainly it's going to melt in the summertime and things like that. You know, you can't keep it in the car. But I go places, I give, you know, I'll bring a box of candy here or there. And I think people really appreciate that. And still to this day, it makes people happy.
So while you can, grab your favorite Easter chocolate and enjoy. And remember, there's always the freezer if you want a taste of Easter somewhere down the road. In Ponchatoula, I'm Tan Trung for WWL Radio.